Thank you for visiting the Illinois Supported Employment Transformation Initiative website. The following recording is part of our Supported Employment podcast library. For more information about our initiative, please visit the website at www.sampleips.weebly.com.
Hello, this is Tanya Moravietz, one of the State of Illinois IPS trainers from Regions 1 and 2. Today we'll be covering some information on how to help people find jobs in spite of justice system involvement. I will be summarizing and giving information that we gathered in 2009 as part of an expert employment specialist project. This was done with Dartmouth to explore some of the reasons that employers hired individuals who had justice system involvement. In 2009, 12 employment specialists were nominated to participate in a project to learn more about how to help people with justice system involvement. Part of this project involved conducting interviews with employers in a wide range of businesses. It was very important for us to gather a wide range of businesses because that reflects the individualization of the IPS programming. Interviews focused on hiring people with criminal histories, so we approached many different types of employers to focus on why they made the decision to hire an individual with justice system involvement. In total, 128 employers were interviewed. Employment specialists met in person with Dartmouth trainers to review surveys and talk about lessons learned. Products of the project include a summary of the surveys, a tip sheet for employment specialists, and a worksheet to help job seekers prepare for meeting with employers. So these interviews that were done with 128 different employers led to a lot of information that was very helpful in synthesizing preferences, things that stood out to build rapport, and suggestions were created based upon this information to help you best support an individual who has justice system involvement. 62% of the employers interviewed reported that they had knowingly hired at least one person with a felony. And that was very good to learn because we find that over half of the employers were open to hiring an individual with a background. And this fact stands in some contradiction to commonly held beliefs about people with justice system involvement not being able to find jobs. So it counteracts some of the beliefs that are held and hopefully prompts us to be more hopeful and translate this hope when working with individuals with justice system involvement. 38% of employers interviewed said they had not ever hired a person with a felony or were not sure. Not sure being that they did not conduct background checks. So some of the lessons that we learned. Although many employers report that they prefer not to hire people with felonies, in fact, more than half have actually hired a person with a felony. 60% of those employers interviewed were independently owned businesses or nonprofits. Independently owned businesses were more likely to hire people with felonies. The employer surveys that were done indicated that the employers were very aware of what types of convictions people had. And those convictions were very diverse in nature. And I think that's important to focus on because many people think that some felonies are so stigma-oriented that they're very complicated to translate into a hiring equation. So through this study, we found that about 15 of the employers knowingly hired individuals who had drug-related felonies. Driving under the influence, 11 people had such a charge. 10 had a charge of theft. 8 had a charge of assault. 7 had sex offenses on their records. 4 had domestic violence. 2 had armed robbery. Two had a conviction of murder. One had a conviction of reckless driving. And criminal trespassing, manslaughter, and gun-related offenses all had one instance of a knowingly hired individual in the employ of one of the employers interviewed. So we really wanted to focus on why those employers made that choice to move forward with the hiring decision. What was it about the person? What was it about the employment specialist approach that made the employer more comfortable with the process? The number one thing that employers indicated were that the people who interviewed had the qualifications to do the job, experience, skills, or training. So that's very important for us to reflect upon when job developing for individuals with justice system involvement. We really want to focus on job match. The person is qualified to do the job. Number two was the person interviewed well. They expressed enthusiasm, they dressed well, they followed up with employer. And part of this interviewing well is also the soft skills that come with someone interviewing. So that could be eye contact. It could be firmness and length of handshake. It could be smiling. So ensure that some mock interviews are done or a person has an opportunity to practice what they're going to say and be very aware of how they're presenting both verbally and non-verbally, focusing on some of those soft skills. Number three was a recommendation from someone whom the employer knew. That could be another employee, could be a parole officer, it could be the employment specialist who has the relationship with the employer. The fourth reason that employers chose to hire individuals with felonies was the belief that the person had changed. So somehow, the person interviewed expressed to the employer that they had changed in a way where they would never commit such a crime again. The fifth is length of time since conviction. So that did factor into the reason that employers decided to hire. And some employers decided to hire because the length of conviction occurrence was so long ago, they felt like the person was ready to try again, and they again believed that the person was sincere about how they had changed. And then other employers chose to hire as part of initiative to help people find employment soon after they came out of the penal system. As we know, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit can sometimes help support the hiring of individuals with convictions, and that is part of the reason some employers made the decision to hire. The sixth reason is person demonstrated sincerity and honesty when explaining the criminal record. So they were very clear about what they did. They didn't get overly caught up in jargon associated with the classification of the offense. They just made a clear, concise statement about what was on their criminal record. So back to lessons learned, these six things that made employers decide to move forward with hiring an individual. What can we do to really help people find employment? This is going to support our clients and help us create relationships with employers in the community. We can't change what happened, but we can help people prepare to talk to employers. So it's not just a job developer's responsibility to approach an employer and articulate all of the things that we're talking about today. Eventually, you're going to have to help the individual who's seeking employment be able to articulate some of these concepts in their own word so that they can self-advocate and make connections firsthand with employers. So number one, basic interviewing skills help. Dressing well, expressing enthusiasm for the job, following up with employers. Make sure that your candidate has interview clothing. Make sure that they know who to call and when to call and at what level of regularity to call or email as an appropriate follow-up for the particular employer that you're working with. Number two, reference from someone the employer knows is very important. So use our relationships with employers to help create these positive relationships. We could be that point of reference. As an employment specialist, if your candidate is meeting with you regularly, they show up on time, they have a high level of enthusiasm for a particular employer or a particular type of work, this is something that we can speak to and serve as a reference. Look at the natural supports in the job candidate's life. Do they have friends, family members, ex-employers, parole officers, clergy members, other clinicians, people that are willing to write a letter of support or function as a reference? Perhaps they do volunteer work, and if so, someone that helps with the organization of that volunteer work or oversees them in that volunteer role could be another excellent reference. The third thing that we learned is that people need to prepare how they will talk about their background. This may take a lot of practice. Individuals may have a large sense of loss or frustration or regret or guilt or anger over some of the things that have happened in their life that are tied to that criminal conviction. So talking about them is not going to be an easy thing. And that's why we really need to put effort into helping people learn how to prepare and actually speak to some of the things that are on their background. One thing that I've learned that can be helpful is recording a mock interview, recording a statement about a conviction, and replaying it and watching it side by side with your job seeker can be very helpful because the two of you can sit together and constructively assess what occurred and make recommendations for changes that might improve their performance. It could be about eye contact. It could be about changing the tone or cadence of voice. It could be about word choice. So a lot of things can come out in a recorded mock interview or practice interviews that can transfer into improving how an interview will go in the future. Now remember, when we help people talk about the background, honesty is very important, as is explaining how people have changed. And we as employment specialists can help an individual craft such a statement, but it's best to use the words that a person is most comfortable with, because when you use words that you're comfortable with, you feel more certain of your message, and it comes across in a way that's not robotic. It's easy to put some emotion into it because you kind of relate to the way that you're saying things. So employer surveys. We're done, and that's how we came to these conclusions. And I wanted to speak a little bit more about the length of time since conviction, because I did mention that that was a factor in some of the employer's decisions to hire. Less than 1 year since a conviction or prison release, 9 employers hired in that category. So less than 1 year since conviction, 9 employers made the decision to hire. 1 to 2 years since conviction, 20 employers made the decision to hire. 2 to 7 years, 7 employers made the decision to hire. And more than 7 years ago, 12 employers made the decision to hire. So the highest category of hire was within 1 to 2 years of a criminal conviction. And the next highest was more than 7 years. So some employers may be opting to work with programs that provide tax credit information and a lot of support to reduce recidivism right after an individual comes out of the penal system. And then others may feel more comfortable hiring those that have had a conviction in their past and have a lot of evidence, anecdotal evidence, recommendations showing how that person has changed. So there's a variance, and it's important for us to know that. Employers also gave some advice. So on top of just letting us know why they made the decision to hire, we asked what they would recommend to workforce development professionals and employment specialists to best connect, better meet their needs, and help them feel more comfortable hiring an individual with a criminal background. number one on the list of advice was that the person should be advised to be upfront and honest. So we're touching on that honesty, that upfront presentation of what happened and why it happened. It's essential to the equation here for helping someone become employed. The second thing is that the person should take responsibility for his or her actions. So letting somebody know that they made a mistake and why they made a mistake and taking responsibility for it was very important to employers. Number three was helping somebody describe how he or she has changed. So in terms of advice, the employer really suggests that we help somebody practice that approach. So when they tell them how they've changed, they really sense that honesty or that regret or that passion for the next point in their life and their goals. That's important for the employer to hear. The fourth thing that the employers recommended was to introduce the person to the employer. So use your relationship with the employer to help that person get a job. Make sure you have contact with the person who makes hiring decisions and be there as a support. Help them get past that gatekeeper and talk to the person who might be in a management position or a position to hire so that they can sell themselves. We also touched upon policies. So how many employers actually had a policy about hiring people with justice system involvement? 66% reported no formal policy. And a lot of people were shocked by that because many people go to some big box stores and they hear that there's a unilateral rule against hiring certain convictions. They feel like there's no gray area to help people advocate. But really, in actuality, 66% of those employers had no formal policy. 18% reported a formal policy against hiring people with felonies. So some employers do have a formal policy. It's specific to felonies. 9% reported a formal policy against hiring people with certain types of felonies. So some employers may say they're not going to hire individuals with felonies, or they have a policy about the types of felonies that they will hire. So for example, in the financial industry, someone may be sensitive to a history of felonies for things like forging checks. In retail, sometimes they're more sensitive to theft. And then in the state of Illinois, there is a specific CANTS list where certain people cannot be hired in specific types of employment if they have particular justice system involvement. 5% of employers reported a formal policy regarding the length of time since conviction. So some employers were open to hiring individuals, but they wanted or expected a certain time to have passed since the conviction in order to hire. Background checks. 73% of employers reported that they do background checks. So many employers do these. The majority of employers do background checks. That's really important for us as employment specialists to know, and it reinforces the need for honesty and being upfront. I've worked with many employment specialists and many individuals who didn't feel comfortable disclosing their justice system involvement, and they chose to be dishonest in reporting what happened. And when the background check came, and sometimes it doesn't happen at the point of hire or a week after hire. I've had individuals who were successfully employed for quite some time, months, 6 months, almost a year, and then the employer did a formal background check, or they got the results back from the background check that had been done months ago, and they found that inconsistency, and they let the person go. The person was terminated from employment. And in working with those employers, many of them indicated that had they known in the beginning, they would have been okay with it. They would have continued to make the decision to hire the individual because they really liked the candidate. They saw their strengths. They were really impressed with their self-advocacy. But seeing as the check came back, counteracting what the person had said, it became an issue of honesty. and formal policy, meaning that the person needed to be terminated because they were dishonest when answering that question. So honesty in this case, I do believe, is the best policy, and the research that we did supports that. 27% of employers indicated that they do not do background checks. So you have the vast majority, 73%, indicating that they do background checks, and then 27% saying that they don't even do a background check. And sometimes, for those that really struggle with reporting their justice system involvement and aren't comfortable with it and feel kind of hopeless or say that they don't want to answer those questions, this 27% could be sort of the place to move forward with job development and approaching employers until the job candidate becomes a little bit more comfortable with self-reporting. More lessons learned. Build relationships with employers. This is an integral part of IPS. IPS is really successful for its aggressive community-based job development efforts, for its relation-building construct with employers. We listen to what their needs are. We learn what their preferences are. We understand their businesses, and therefore we can make really good recommendations about people that would be strong candidates. And then we can also educate our job seekers about what is expected at each of these employers. It really helps us make fantastic job matches. And in making those job matches, we're building relationships with employers. They're seeing that we're coming through and listening to their needs and providing strong candidates. So build those relationships and help people connect with employers. Do that in a variety of ways. It's not just a one-time contact. It's relationship building through repeated contacts. It's going to Chamber of Commerce events. It's knowing your community. It's being able to show employers that you're part of the fabric of their community and you understand their needs and you understand the needs of their peers. So building relationships, making reference to other employers that you've had strong successes with, these are all part of that relationship building. Introducing employers to individuals rather than asking if they hire people with felonies is also a really good tip. So make sure you introduce somebody, show the strengths. Make sure that person that you're introducing who may have justice involvement is ready and prepared to self-advocate. Helping people obtain their records is another important lesson learned. Some people don't remember all of the things that were on their criminal record. Some people think things are on their criminal record that were actually dismissed and were not a conviction. So helping somebody really get that information will help them be able to be honest and genuine and understand what they need to disclose to an employer when asked questions about justice system involvement. One of the most important things we learned in this study was that people must have face-to-face contact with employers so they can explain how their life has changed. Face-to-face is really the way to do that, showcasing emotion and intent and lessons learned, enthusiasm for the next phase of your life, for that type of employment you're pursuing. Filling out application after application will be time wasted. If there's no in-person follow-up, if there's no connection supported, it's very difficult to help somebody find employment if they're just filling out applications. That advocacy, either by the employment specialist or follow-along support for the individual who is the job seeker, prompting them to make those connections, let them do follow-up, is really integral to getting people hired. Employers commented that again and again. They hired individuals that showed enthusiasm, that followed up, that had references and connections to people that were already employed in their sector. So it's really important to help people prepare for that follow-up and do it in person. So how do we help people prepare what they will say? And what should they say? Based upon this study and the interviews that we did, we need to help people come up with a statement about the convictions. We need them then to share an expression of remorse or responsibility for what occurred. And after that's been shared, indicate how your life has changed. And then at the very end, tell the employer why this person would be a good employee. So those are the four things that a person really needs to encapsulate when they're self-advocating and talking about their justice system involvement. So again, a statement about convictions, a brief expression of remorse or responsibility, how the person is changing his or her life, and why the person would be a good employee. So let's kind of take apart that step one, that statement about convictions. I'm going to give a couple of examples that were shared. In 2004, I was convicted of breaking and entering. So simple, concise, specific. Another example. There is something I want to bring up. I have a number of offenses related to drugs and theft. Because sometimes it's not just one conviction. We've worked with many people who have a series of convictions, and they run the gamut in terms of seriousness, in terms of length of time since conviction. Some people have justice system histories that are 20 years or longer long. So it's important that not just one conviction, if there's a series, is addressed, but the history of convictions. Step two. So once that simple, concise statement is made, the take responsibility part steps in. And this can be stated in many ways. Again, we really want to focus on verbiage that a person feels comfortable with in their own words. That's going to be very important. One example, I made a mistake. What I learned from that was, I knew what I did was wrong. So again, simple statement of responsibility in your client's own words. Step three. Some examples about how to explain the changes in your life. One statement that speaks to these changes, an example, is I will never go back to jail again. I've decided that my life has to change. I'm going to treatment, and getting a job is also part of getting my life back on track. A second example that might be used is I've been volunteering as a way to give back to my community. I also want to support myself. I know that many individuals that I've worked with have very particular things that they want to talk about regarding how their life is changing. And those are very individualized. They're part of a person's family sometimes. So for instance, I've worked with people that might indicate, I really want to find employment because I want to be a good role model for my children. I want to be the father that I wasn't earlier in their lives at this point in time and make them proud. And employment is part of that mission for me. So again, it's got to really resonate with somebody's personalized goals and the things that they hold dear in their life. And that's why using their own words and finding something that connects with them is going to be the best way to relate that sincerity to an employer. So step four, the last part of this process, describe reasons why the candidate would be a good employee. Some examples stating that are, I'm a person who really wants to work. In my last job, I did not miss work. Another example might be, I would be a good employee because I have experience as an assembler. Certifications, work history, education, all of these things can be very important in this descriptor of why people would be a good employee. So for example, I would be a good deli employee because I worked for 5 years in a commissary and I did everything from food prep to serving to washing the dishes and baking and cooking. So that's very specific, and if it ties into the type of work the person is seeking, it's going to be a saleable, interesting point to the employee. They're going to think, oh, well, you really seem to understand kind of back of the house and front of the house food service work. You could be helpful on my team. And a tip, I think, to remember is the more that you could quantify some of that, and be specific, the more impressive it's going to be. Saying to an employer, I have food service experience, is not the same as saying, I have food service experience where I helped seat up to 500 people at a lunch hour. I've done front of house prep cook work and seating and dish cleaning at the end. I have experience on industrial dish cleaning equipment and stoves. I've done everything from baking to grilling in a large cafeteria setting. So you see how the clarity and the impressiveness of somebody's accomplishments is going to kind of ramp up when you have some of those quantifiable, very specific examples. So then we put it all together. We have to put those four elements, personalized elements, together into a statement that someone feels comfortable making so that they can self-advocate with an employer. And one example of this completed statement about conviction is, I have a sexual assault charge on my record. I know that what I did was wrong. I used poor judgment and made a life-changing mistake. I'm in counseling now, and I understand how to avoid making the same mistakes. I'm eager to start a new job and continue down a more positive path. I have supports. I'm an active member of my church, and my family is behind me. I would be a good employee because I'm extremely reliable, and I've experienced driving a forklift. I'm eager to work, and my schedule is flexible. So that's an example of all four components put together. Another example speaks to a series of justice system involvement. I have several convictions related to drugs and burglary. I understand that I've made a poor choice. I've made poor choices. I'm older now, and I, for the past few years, have been focused on living a different kind of life. I've not committed any crimes since 2007. I'm currently a volunteer at a soup kitchen, and I never miss a day that I'm scheduled. I've always been a person who wanted to work, and I never complain on the job. I'd like to work for your company because. And then that is left blank. So that's an example of where you're going to personalize further and really articulate why the individual wants to work for a particular employer. And in this instance, you really fill it in with things that employer may take pride in. I always use the example of something like Whole Foods. So if you're advocating to work at someplace like Whole Foods, you may say, I really want to work at Whole Foods because they value sustainable architecture, agriculture, and they provide a high quality of food. They've won many awards. They have excellent human resources departments and give back to their communities, and this level of renown and sensitivity to environmental needs is something that I would really be proud to take part in, and it really coincides with a lot of my own values because I'm a person that really wants to support local agriculture and have the best quality foods for everyone in my community. So that's an example. I wouldn't recommend using my words precisely again because it's a very individualized. So find some of those wonderful standout qualities that every employer has and help your job candidate speak to those, because people like to understand that you know about their mission, you know about their products or their quality of service, and you're in alignment with them in a way that will make you a really strong employee. This last part is helping people practice. So it's one thing to have that statement. You've gotten to the point where you develop something, a person feels comfortable with the words they're going to use, and they practiced it with you. You meet once a week and they're in your office. That's wonderful. But then soon that person is going to have to practice those words in a new environment with a new person while they're feeling perhaps a high level of anxiety and everything changes. Those words may just fly out of a person's memory, so it's very helpful to practice. Many people have indicated that they have to overcome shame, hopelessness, or anger when talking about their history, so there's a lot of emotion behind that. Practicing will help people kind of overcome some of that emotion and really be able to convey that message in a believable way. It's really important to help people remember their strengths. Make lists. Review those strengths. Have people talk about affirmations. Sometimes it's a long process to help somebody with justice system find employment. They need a cheerleader. I've talked to a lot of people who have justice system involvement, and they indicate the one thing that they really want from their employment specialist, the transformative thing that was offered in the relationship with an IPS employment specialist, was that they gave the job candidate hope. They helped them feel confident. They said that we're going to keep applying and eventually it's going to hit. We can improve our chances by doing this. You have a lot of strengths. You came here today. I commend you for meeting with me consistently. So again, just articulating those strengths and qualities and skills are going to help somebody build up their self-esteem and make them more confident. And that confidence is going to be exuded when they interact with employers. So really, that type of support and encouragement and creating hope in someone is one of the best things you can do. Practice, practice, practice. Practice until people can give their statements in a manner that sounds sincere. And again, get creative. You can videotape it. You can have them practice with other people, not just you. You can have them practice with peers or a supervisor, or you can have them practice with another employment specialist. You can do mock interviews. Hopefully there's some employers that are willing to create a mock interview situation for you so that job candidate can really feel some of the stressors outside of your office that may manifest in anxiety when they're trying to self-advocate. So it's really important we give them a wide breadth of experiences in terms of practicing that statement. Some people have trouble taking responsibility. So we may have to take our time in helping them come up with a statement that seems fair and accurate from their perspective. And that could require some processing. This is another opportunity, seeing as this is the IPS model, to bring in that integrated treatment team and work together with a mental health clinician to develop a statement in a way where the person can kind of manage their emotions around it, and they have that mental health professional support in crafting the message and working with the employment specialist. So coming together in a team environment to help the person figure out a way to talk about it is one method that can really create great results. There's also a worksheet that's been developed that kind of helps somebody fill in the four different phases and come up with the specific statement that they want to make, and it gives examples of statements that others have created. So that is definitely a tool that I would recommend using so people can kind of put things down and see examples firsthand. Other ways to help people move forward in that process speak to the giving of hope that I mentioned. And another way to do that is to give examples of other people who have gone back to work in spite of serious criminal histories. If there's testimonials, if you can have somebody who is interested in serving as a mentor to help other people, if there's groups in your community where people that have justice system involvement support each other, these are all ways that people can sort of learn by example and get peer support that's going to really increase their level of hope. Some organizations in Illinois that I've read about are the Winner's Circle, and those are groups that get together where individuals who have justice system involvement and substance abuse disorders get together to support each other and just talk about their paths and how they can achieve their goals, different community supports that might be available to them. So linking your job seeker to a group such as that could be helpful. Another way might be joining other organizations that search out ways to help people find employment if they have justice system involvement, and something like a CSAC, which is another group, it's CSAC. Groups kind of occur across the state of Illinois, and those are where a lot of different stakeholders get together and talk about ways to reduce recidivism. Parole officers often attend, representatives from community-based agencies, individuals that have justice system involvement, pastors, people from the religious community, people that are in politics in local areas show up, and they talk about these issues and they talk about resources and needs. And that's another great place for somebody to go and self-advocate and maybe make connections with other organizations that have things that may support them in finding stable housing, that may support them in terms of creating a broader natural support system. So they can be very valuable. Again, the Winner's Circle might be an option in your community, and the CSAC groups, C-S-A-C, could be very helpful. Making simple, simple, hopeful statements. I believe you can get a job. I'm proud of the progress you made. You've had 3 interviews. We've learned from each one. I'm hopeful that you will get a job. I have faith in the fact that you will get a job. And then again, if there's anyone that you can connect in terms of being a mentor, somebody who's willing to say, I struggled too. I had justice system involvement. I didn't think I'd ever find a job. I got the door shut in my face so many times. And I just kept going, and I eventually found a job, and now I have a job, and my life has changed in this way. This is how I got through it. It took me 3 months. I didn't know if it would ever happen. Here's some suggestions. People really learn from others that have had the same struggles. Other things that may help in terms of supporting a person to self-advocate and making them more competitive in the job market might be exploring whether or not the specific convictions that your job seeker has are eligible for expungement or sealing. So certain things can be expunged and certain things can be sealed, and there's a process involved for both of them. Some felonies can be sealed. Others require a pardon. Most misdemeanors can be sealed. Some cannot. An example of some that cannot would be a violation of an order of protection, violent crimes, sex crimes, violation of Humane Care for Animals Act, sex offender registration crimes. So there's a variety of things, and they're very specific, and the entirety of them can't be covered in the context of this presentation. But what I want everyone to know is that it is important to explore expungement and sealing of records if it's in alignment with what your client wants to do. Making them aware of these things might also be helpful. Other tools that can help both you and your clients are attached to the PowerPoint that I'm using during this presentation, which will be available for you to access. But there's information on how to read my rap sheet, because when you look at the rap sheet, there's a lot of abbreviations, a lot of jargon that's really kind of confusing. So it may take a little bit of support to figure out exactly what those rap sheets say. So there's a link to how to read my rap sheet. There's another link for common abbreviations on rap sheets. So let's make sense of this jargon. What does that stand for? And then there's another link for what type of sentence did I receive? Because there could be a lot of things on a rap sheet that were dismissed, that weren't actually a conviction. So though they're on the rap sheet, it's not something the person was convicted of, and that's an important distinction to make. There's also links on the PowerPoint that is part of this presentation on expunging your criminal record, on sealing your criminal record, how to file for executive clemency. That's tied into the pardon that I mentioned as one of the possible solutions to trying to get some of the justice system off of a rap sheet. It depends on where a person was convicted of a crime when you're trying to ascertain how to get a rap sheet or a comprehensive record. So it's really important for us to note what city or county the person lived in. Some people that we work with have moved around a lot. They've been transient. And different employers do different levels of background checks. So one might be a local level, one might be a national level. So an example is if someone's working with a job candidate who lives in the city of Chicago and gets their rap sheet through Chicago, they might not be aware of incidents that occurred in Peoria or Florida or other places the person lived. So what I recommend in a case where someone has lived in a lot of different places is to obtain an FBI multi-state record. And that will give you very specific information in all the places around the nation where the person has lived regarding any justice system involvement. And there's a pretty particular process in terms of requesting that. the person needs to get their fingerprints taken. There's different places that that can be done. It could be done at a police station. There's also private vendors that can provide a full set of fingerprints to be sent, the check or money order to be attached to this inquiry is $18, and the request must be made by the individual. So the person who's seeking their multi-state FBI background check must make a written request about it and include a full set of official fingerprints as well as a check or money order, and then there's a particular address with the U.S. Department of Justice that this needs to be sent to. I also want to note that in terms of expungement and sealment, it tends to be a process. It doesn't happen instantaneously. So it's important to advise people, because I've worked with people that wanted to find employment, but they really wanted to try to expunge their conviction before they proceeded. And that expungement process could take many, many, many months. And as we all know, it's really important to help people move on the motivation and enthusiasm they have to find employment and kind of hit the ground running. So that delay technically could be indefinite. There's also charges that could range upwards of $100 to process the expungement and sealment request. I do know that the city of Chicago does offer a waiver, so if a person cannot afford to ask for the expungement or the sealment and process the paperwork, they can request a waiver that supports the processing. There's also places like Cabrini Legal Aid, which will help people understand how to advocate for themselves and inform people of their rights. So other than knowing specifics about expungement, concealment, and appeals for executive clemency, it's also important to know additional information about the resources in your local community, be it pro bono legal aid or funds that can help people with the expungement and concealment process. Other resources I've learned about that can be helpful, there is an organization called Sacred Transformations, and they help people transform some of the tattoos that may be a marker of a time in their life where they were involved with the justice system. Oftentimes gang members may have tattoos that showcase their affiliation, and they may be in places that are very obvious, and when people move on from that lifestyle and gang membership, they may find that that tattoo or those tattoos get in the way of the way that they want to present themselves to employers and candidates, and Sacred Transformations can help create a different image that has a more positive message. The Office of the State Appellate Defender has an expungement program. There is a Chicago office and a Springfield office. And the State Attorney General has specific information to help you find out about occupational bars. So previously in this presentation, I mentioned the CANTS list, and that is a list of specific occupations and specific convictions where job placement is just not allowed by law. So it's important for us to know some of those things before we move forward and support somebody in trying to get a job where they're technically barred from performing that job by the state of Illinois. The state attorney general number to find out more specific information about occupational bars is 312-814-3000. And for the expungement program, Office of the State Appellate Defender, I'm going to give numbers in Chicago and Springfield to ensure that you can get more specific information if you would like it. The Chicago office number is 866-787-1776. And the Springfield office is 866-431-4907. So thank you for your time in learning more about this topic. I think the most important things to think about when moving forward is to understand that our role is to advocate and help make those introductions and employer relationships that assist people with justice system in finding employment, and to give people that are involved in that job search process hope that they'll find a job, help connect them to different peer support options, be enthusiastic in the job search so that they can best convey their enthusiasm and really kind of embrace the hope that you're offering, and really help them practice and prepare that personal statement about the conviction in a way that means something to them. And in that practicing and in that capturing their own verbiage and comfort in the way that they're presenting that, automatically ensues that sense of sincerity that employers were speaking of, one of the prime reasons that they move forward with hiring an individual. And lastly, not only do we work on how people articulate that and express themselves verbally, but we should focus on some of the nonverbals also to help that person convey a sense of confidence and enthusiasm. And again, that's eye contact, that's handshakes, that's having comfortable, appropriate clothes for the interview process. All of these things come together to really support people in finding jobs that they like. Never forget about job match, because again, people are going to be enthusiastic when they're looking for work that they want to do. And when they're enthusiastic about that, it translates into a positive energy that is really well embraced by employers during the interview. So good luck. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you for listening. You can listen to additional podcasts or download a transcript by visiting us at www.sampleips.weebly.com/learn_about_ips.html and scrolling down to the podcast library.